is The Fantasy Show with Andy McNamara and Shaw Ali on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
It is Sunday, and you know what that means. It is time for The Fantasy Show across the Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm Andy McNamara alongside Shaw Ali. We are entering NFL Draft Week, people. The most magical time of the year outside of fantasy football draft season. But the real NFL draft coming up this week. We'll talk some fantasy baseball, two start pitchers, waiver wire pickups, some fantasy wrestling. Who's going to be the listener GM? We'll go through our drop the belt stats from this past week. Interesting week in the world of wrestling. So we'll get into those, but lots of NFL draft talk. Our guy Rich Dotson from DynastyNerds.com is going to join us at the top of the next hour to really show, put our final plans together. Because if you're a fantasy football owner, which I would wager you probably are if you're listening to the program, this is where you really got to start scouting out and really got to start figuring, okay, which prospect do I like? Get that in your mind. Which ones do I like? And then after the draft, it's, okay, where do they go? And what does that mean for everything else?
From a prospect perspective, Andy, I wonder, like every year there's always someone who ends up being a contributor, like some kind of rookie, right? Like the last year, obviously, it was Ja'Marr Chase and Justin Jefferson before him the year prior. But I am genuinely curious, like, how many rookies will be fantasy relevant right off the bat? Like, I think that's something I'm curious to ask Rich about a little later on in the show, just because, like, I bet it's, like, from a dynasty perspective, and I know that's Rich's thing, but obviously it's going to be more than one, obviously, but I'm wondering for redraft leagues, because, you know, that's the most popular format, I wonder what it'll end up as. You know what I mean? Like, you think it'll end up as more than, I don't know, three, let's say? Like, if we set the over-under at 2.5, you think we'll hit the over on someone who, like, genuinely contribute to your team?
You know what? For this year, you know what? I'd say, yeah, I'd take the over based on wide receiver. I would. It's tight, though, Show. I think it's like one position relevant, really, because I don't think any of these quarterbacks for, gosh, unless you get Malik Willis just kind of scooting around till defenses figure him out and he's running for his life. But there's no running back that really, that's always a huge wild card, the running back, but there's not really a true first-grade running back or maybe back end. But I think there's so many wide receivers that it could very well do that. You have Drake London and my guy Christian Watson, the two Ohio State receivers alone, Garrett Wilson, Olave, right? Like, there's a lot. And I wonder, Show, well, what's the surprise going to be? Because after the draft last year, it was Trey Sermon to the 49ers. All right, let's go Trey Sermon. We're all feeling good. Kyle Shanahan, that bleep, didn't let anybody know, Show, that he didn't like Trey Sermon. Trey Sermon wronged him in some way. And all of a sudden, everyone spends $90 in fab on Elijah Mitchell in week two. And that's how weird fantasy football can go. Elijah Mitchell on nobody's radar for any reason whatsoever because they drafted Trey Sermon. This sixth-round pick comes out and is now a bona fide back-end RB1, I'd say.
You know what's really funny about the Eli Mitchell thing? I remember, you know, you and I write the articles for sportsnet.ca. You do the waiver wire pickups. I do the start sits. And based on all the stuff coming out of the preseason and practices and so on, I for sure put Trey Sermon as a start in week one. So those articles did not get off to a banner start.
You and everybody else, though.
Well, and here's the thing, like, so you put in the waiver wire, like, maybe we should be picking up Eli Mitchell. And it's funny because I often feel like people are super wary of, like, spending a lot of their waiver dollars, like, really in any sport, on someone in, like, the first 2 weeks of the season. Cause, you know, it's kind of like your mentality for anything, right? Like, what if I need it later? What if something else happens? And it's funny, right? Cause I don't really, like, there were other situations that came up later in the season, but I think, like, by and large, I know Eli Mitchell got injured pretty early on and then he came back and he was really good, but, you know, I feel like it's funny to think that waiver wire situation might have cost you or earned you a championship, depending on if you did decide to pony up for Eli Mitchell, and that was in week two. Like, that may have been the most important waiver decision of the season, and that was in week two, basically.
And it was super risky at the time, because we know with San Francisco, like, just as easily, Trey Sermon could have come back in week four and was the guy.
Yeah.
For all
yeah.
we know. Right? That easily could have happened. Jermichael Hasty. They had a lot of injuries, too, in that backfield, which allowed Elijah Mitchell to sort of pop a little bit and get his chances. And remember, Deebo Samuel was pretty much a running back half the time himself. He scored, what, 6 touchdowns, whatever it was. So we'll talk more about Deebo a little bit later on. But that's what's so tricky with a team like the 49ers compared to a club that you know is just going to go with one guy. Like under Matt Nagy, for example, with the Chicago Bears. If David Montgomery was in there, you know he was getting the football, right? That was it. In Pittsburgh, you know Roethlisberger wasn't running with it. It was going to be Najee Harris. So like when you have those definitives of like, okay, I know it's going to be one guy, that's much easier than, well, it's probably this guy. And then on top of that, yeah, you're paying pretty much your entire fab dollar amount for the year on a 6-round rookie running back in week 2. It was gutsy. A lot of people did it, and you're right, it did pay off.
Yeah, I was not one of those people. I decided to stay away. Ultimately, it didn't really like affect the season too much, but I mean, for the person that did end up picking up Eli Mitchell in my home league, that ended up he had a lot of other injury problems. Like he had Russell Wilson, and that was obviously last year. Like Russell Wilson was that all was right. With the mallet finger injury and that kind of stuff. So I mean, you know, obviously other injuries affect your team, but it was kind of funny to think that one decision almost propelled his team to the playoffs. You think he missed the playoffs by like it ended up coming down to like record, he was tied with like 3 other teams and points for and points against, and it's like those kinds of things make a difference, right? So yeah. To go back to the rookies of this year, I am curious to see who it ends up being. I think you're right. Running back, I don't think this is like the, you know, like the most heralded class for running backs, right? Like a Breece Hall and Kenneth Walker. Like I'm sure those guys are going to be good, but I don't think there's really a, unless I'm like mistaken, and we can ask Rich this about this a little later on, but I don't think there's a really like a workhorse type running back. Although at the same time, I don't really think workhorse running backs really exist anymore in the NFL, really.
Yeah, like, you know, Najee Harris would probably be the most recent example of a guy who is Jonathan Taylor, right? But to your point, it's not the norm. It's much more often is going to be a committee. Similar to, I would think, definitely not to the same extreme as in baseball, but I think we're starting to see that a little bit too, where in fantasy baseball, if you have your stud ace starting pitcher who's going to give you 6 innings every time, that's becoming a bit of a unicorn, right? Because you have so many different, okay, I'm going to go 4, then you do the long relief and all that, and there's not as many true sort of what you consider old school aces that come out, and so their value is so high, and I think that's the same thing with running back. There's not that many of true bell cow, I'm getting X number of carries a game, I'm the only back, combined with mobile quarterbacks. Because let's say in Baltimore, you know, if you stay in Baltimore and there's, you know, pick your running back, you still got Lamar Jackson who's running around.
Yeah. It's funny you mentioned the pitcher thing, just because I was thinking, while you were saying that, I was thinking back to, I guess today's Sunday, so I guess this was on Thursday? It was whenever they, it was Thursday, because Thursday was the day game against the Red Sox. Mm-hmm. And they wrapped up that series in Fenway, and the Blue Jays pitcher for that game was Kevin Gausman, right? And Gausman went so, I don't know how much of that game you watched, but he went so deep into that game, he started the 9th inning for the Blue Jays. That's like, he was that close to throwing, I guess at the time when the 9th inning started, I think he came back out, it was 3-0. He let a guy get, the very first pitch, he let a guy get on base, there was a pitching change, Romano came out. Other guys got on base, some runs were scored, and then they won the game 3-2. But Gausman, I think I remember hearing Ben Wagner, of course, and he's going to have the call of today's game against the Astros, as he always does. But I remember hearing Ben say something like, Gausman's start into the 9th inning was the longest start by a pitcher of any team in Major League Baseball all season. Right? Which is crazy. I mean, it's not crazy because it happened to the Blue Jays. It's just crazy to think that a starter going into the 9th inning, which, I mean, generally speaking is rare already, but just like a starter going into the 9th inning in 2022 in April, given the fact that we saw like all the big time pitchers like Gerrit Cole and Corbin Burns, and even to a lesser extent like Clayton Kershaw and I don't know, Max Scherzer and all these guys get lit up in their first start of the season. And now you have like Gausman going, you know, almost 9 innings. He basically ended up going 8 innings, but man, I just like you just don't see that anymore, right? Like the way bullpens are used now, and analytics play a part into that, and the, you know, the player performance department say, okay, like, you know, when a guy sees the order, you know, 3 times, that's when you want to pull him, and so on. Like I remember in my big dynasty league for baseball, I had the choice to pick between Julio Urias or Sandy Alcantara. And I mean, they're both fantastic pitchers. You couldn't go wrong either way. But I ended up going with Alcantara only because I thought there was a better chance that Alcantara might be asked to go deeper into games and therefore get more stats. Just because the Dodgers are one of those teams that, like, I mean, Urias is fantastic, but how often does he go super deep into games with the Dodgers bullpen? Not often, right?
They don't need to. Yeah. They don't need to. Yeah. Because, like you said, the depth. And funny you mentioned with the Blue Jays, because we just saw Alek Manoah go 6 innings with that stud arm of his. So now, like, if you're thinking about from a Blue Jays perspective, and you could have two guys, and and Manoah, the way he has built himself off of last year and early on this year, improving to 3-0 yesterday, to be able, what I'm most impressed with him, show outside of the physical traits, right? You know, you're just big dude. They had the measurables. He compares to Travis Kelce and Rob Gronkowski when it comes to size, the powerful arm. It's his mental toughness. Like, that guy gets beat up in the first inning. How many other pitchers across baseball? Okay, well, not my day. You know, the dude gets yanked after 2 2/3, and now, No, this guy shakes it off, has like a heart-to-heart with himself on the mound, comes back, his velocity gets better. He gets, like, angrier but smarter. It's ridiculous. I love it. And he went 6 innings, Manoah did. So you now look at the Blue Jays rotation, and you get two guys that could do that. And even though you might want to use your bullpen and all the this and that, if you can get a guy who's going to be playing better and you can save those arms for other days, that is so valuable. So I think it's that balance, right, of like if you got a guy, hopefully the coaches, the management, whatever, is smart enough to say, this dude's hot. Let him roll. Let him go another inning. Let him go another inning and save the arms, the bullpen arms, for another day.
You know, on the Manoah thing too. The home run he gave up in the first inning to Alex Bregman, you know, wasn't great. Obviously, he struggled in the first inning, to a huge degree, but obviously he gave up the home run. And Jose Urquidy on the other side actually gave up a home run. He gave up the very first pitch of the game, or like the second pitch of a game, was a home run to George Springer. And then he loaded the bases immediately afterwards. And I mean, Jose Urquidy is a very good pitcher, especially at home. And I was like, oh my gosh, like, I remember I was watching that game yesterday. I was in the studio. I was in baseball control. And one of my roles for the radio broadcasts is to do like the pitching changes. And all I could think of was, boy, this is going to be a really long day if we're doing pitching changes in the first inning, right?
Oh,
and,
boy.
But you know what ended up happening? Like, he got out of the inning and settled down essentially for the rest of his start, right? Like, I think he ended up going like 5 2/3, and Manoah ended up going 6 as well. And it's just funny to think that they both struggled in the first inning, both ended up coming together. The Blue Jays were still managed to take advantage of the Astros' bullpen, and the Astros' bullpen is also quite good. But it's just funny to think with Manoah. I don't know if you follow this Twitter account, Andy. It's called much like I told you about that Ump Scorecard account. There's another account that I really
following
like.
That.
Yeah. So here's another one I think you'll like. It's called Wood. It's a Twitter account. It's automated, right? It's Wood_it_Dong DONG, and it's about like it's basically it takes into account the launch angle of home runs, like the distance of home runs, the exit velocity, and then it like takes all the information about the various ballparks into account, like where the ball landed in the outfield or, you know, wherever it was. And like it basically takes all that information into account, and it tells you in how many ballparks in Major League Baseball would that be a home run in, essentially, right? So, Santiago, well, it's all computer done. It's like it says oh. There's a little robot sign. It's like automated. So I get last year. I don't think it was automated, but I think it is this year. And I think Like Espinal's home run from last night, which is a monster home run, his second home run of the year. The guy's come into this series and has now doubled his career home runs, which is just remarkable. But that would have been a home run in 16 of 30 Major League Baseball ballparks. The Alex Bregman home run was a Minute Maid Park special. That was the only ballpark in all of MLB in which that would have been a home run. So, you know what? I can't fault Alec Manoah too much when that would have been like a flyout at Rogers Center.
Jeez, what an interesting account. That's just for curiosity one, right? The ump one just makes you mad.
Yeah.
That one just is just begging to go to the robot home plate umpire. Like enough with these clowns, enough with the clown show. Get them out of there.
Yeah. Give me robots. Send in the robots.
Give me robots.
Yeah.
And you know what? It may come back. This may be the start to like the Terminator side where it's like, oh, it all started with robot umpires. Those guys on the fantasy show really pushed them over the edge and now
that's how Skynet that's how Skynet activated itself when they activated robot umpires in 2022. You know what?
If that's how it has to end, show, damn it, I'll take a couple of good officiated called baseball seasons and I'll deal with Skynet. We'll take our chances.
Skynet is the name of my Wi-Fi network here at my place.
Is it really? Nice. It all started with show. I knew it. But we'll get into more fantasy baseball as the show goes on. Two start pitchers, fantasy baseball waiver wire pickups as well as the show goes on. You know what's funny? Show, quick side note. I know we tried doing our USFL DraftKings contest last week, and we'd say, hey, you know what? The one pick team show, pick team Andy, who's going to win? DraftKings ended up scrapping the contest.
Oh, really?
I don't know if you saw that.
Yeah. No, I didn't.
There was like an email that came out before. It's like, oh, the game time's been changed. And then I don't really know the explanation. DraftKings was like, your account's been refunded because it didn't really say why, but it was just, they're like, ah, they just like, they didn't want to watch it. They were just like, I was like, oh, okay.
Oh, man.
I guess that's
really funny.
Cause I was coming. I'm like, all right. Get a giveaway. Who won? Who, you know, get the pizza for the list? Nope. Could not track it, people. And I'll tell you, I didn't know half the guys I put into the lineup, so I not like we can go back and look at the box score.
You know, it's really funny. I was preparing for the show last night, Andy, and I was doing my notes, and I was prepping the lineup for the show today, and I was like, oh, I wonder who won that lineup. And I was like, you know what? I don't even want to open DraftKings to check, and then so I just I freely admit out of pure laziness I didn't check, and then really quick, briefly before bed, I'm lying in bed and all I could think of was, man, maybe I could go back and listen to like the end of last week's episode just to run it down. I'll write down the names, go check the scores, and then I'm like, what am I doing? I'm not gonna do that for the USFL.
I refuse to do that on principle. Not that the scores last week, folks, this is a weird football score. To kick New Jersey Generals 10-6 winners over the Michigan Panthers. Philadelphia Stars in the Battle of Pennsylvania 30-23 over the Pittsburgh Maulers. Houston Gamblers came up snake eyes against the Birmingham Stallions 33-28. See, wordplay show, I'll work that in to the score to make it more interesting for the listener. And then today, it's the New Orleans Breakers, which you, I like what you said, you're like, so they named the team after the safety device that failed in one of the worst
natural
disasters.
I don't get it. Like, why didn't they call the New Orleans team if they're going for something like relatively fun that's like, you know, unique to each city, why wasn't it like the New Orleans Mardi Gras or like the New Orleans Bourbon, like for bourbon? I don't know, like literally anything else, like
something, not the else. Failed safety Come device on. That ruined the city. Good Lord. Well, they're playing the Tampa Bay Bandits today, your Tampa Bay team show, who has our guy Jordan Tamu in it. They're both 1-0. So I will not be watching any USFL. But if you want to, it's there. And again, I don't know why DraftKings didn't cancel the contest, but I think it's safe to say we won't be doing any more USFL. DraftKings contest. Is that fair?
I was just looking it up just because I was curious. I only remember the three players I remember drafting are the two running backs for the Pittsburgh team, because I thought, you know, one of them has to score a touchdown. Spoiler alert, neither of them did. And
are you serious? That's fine.
And I remember drafting Isaiah Zuber, because I've done, and I think you have too, like the various Sportsnet Tonights, and we've had guests on and stuff, and we've had Andrew Zuber on, right? And,
right.
Andrew used to work for Sportsnet, of course, and now he does a variety of things. We have to get Andrew on at some point in the not-too-distant future. Andrew hosts like a Twitch show every Wednesday because he's a big AEW fan, Andy.
I know, I follow.
Yeah, massive AEW guy. So we should, wrestling brain. So we should get Andrew on. Also, he's a big Blue Jays guy, so we can talk some fantasy baseball with him too. But either way, also I just wanted to give him a shout out because his wife gave birth to a healthy baby boy, which is very exciting.
Nice.
Just last week. So nice. I picked Isaiah Zuber in Andrew's honor, and you know what? Isaiah Zuber caught a touchdown last week. So
there you have it.
I have a feeling I might have won that contest.
There you go. I'm just looking. Tamu had one touchdown, two interceptions.
Oh, God. Well, we both Man. Picked Tamu, so that wouldn't have helped anyone.
These box scores on the site aren't... They don't even have their full name. It just has the guy's last names.
It assumes you know.
On the USFL, but...
It assumes you know,
Andy. Assumes we know. Oh, of course. Groshek. Yes, of course. How silly of me. So stupid. Went 77 yards, but whatever. Why do you have the last... You make the site... You can't have the guy's full name. You can't even click on it. Ridiculous. Enough. No, no more USFL talk. That's it.
All right. Maybe
for Zuber, we have him on because our AEW All Elite Wrestling, for those tuning in, Drop the Belt Fantasy Listener League, it wraps up at the end of May, leading into the Double or Nothing pay-per-view. So maybe we have him in that last, that Sunday of the show to sort of wrap up that fantasy wrestling season for us.
Yeah, I'm down. I think we have some good guests, I think, coming up. I think, I mean, we'll certainly get Andrew on. Nick will probably join us at some point. Nick Alberga, right? The Golden Muzzy, to chat some fantasy hockey. The season is almost done in the NHL, right? The Leafs, losers, unfortunately, of two in a row. If you're listening to this outside of Toronto, you're probably either very pleased or indifferent. If you're listening to this in Toronto, you're probably less pleased and less indifferent, I would imagine. But Nick to join us, as well. I know we have some fantasy hockey guys coming on soon in the not-too-distant future, like Michael Amato and other guys. So, you know, I'm very much looking forward to this time of year, especially once the NHL playoffs start, Andy, because, like, we'll have so many things to look forward to. Like, you know, people often debate what the best time of year is, like, sports-wise. Mm-hmm. I think it's this time of year, like, just because, like, I know, like, the next time of year would be, like, when hockey and basketball start back up and the NFL is going as well. That's definitely, like, the next time, but just being able to have basketball playoffs and the first round of the NHL playoffs, oh, man. Like, there are a few, I don't know about you, but there are a few things I enjoy more than hockey playoffs. Okay, even for teams that I don't really watch, like, it's just so much fun.
Well, we had also last night show for our other home base stations in Vancouver and Calgary. They played each other. Flames doubling up the Canucks 6-3. So there you go. See, not just Toronto-centric, right? Got the other score in.
I gotta say, like, because the Flames are like 98. I think they've clinched a long time ago. I was gonna say 98% chance to make the playoffs, but they clinched a while ago, just like the Leafs did. I was hoping the Canucks would win because, I don't know, like, they needed a lot of math to go in their favor in order to have the Canucks actually make the playoffs. But, like, I mean, think about it. Since the new year, essentially, the Canucks have been playing very, like, maybe not very good hockey, but, like, much better hockey than they've been playing since the beginning of the season, right? To the point where Elias Pettersson and, like, you know, some of these other guys were scoring at, like, ludicrous paces, and you kind of thought, man, like, if some of these other teams, like the Golden Knights or the Kings, and the Kings lost Drew Doughty, if, like, these teams in the Pacific struggle a little bit, maybe the Canucks could make the playoffs. And, again, like, it's not impossible still, but I think mathematically it's going to be pretty hard for the Canucks to overcome. But, I mean, hell, I also think it's just more fun, don't you think, when more Canadian teams make the playoffs? Like, I'm not certain. Like, am I going to cheer for a lot of them? Probably not, but because I'm Toronto-born and raised, and I'm biased that way, but... Like, if the Canucks make the playoffs and the Flames make the playoffs and the Oilers make the playoffs and the Jets and the Sens and so on eventually do as well, like, that's just more fun. Like, I'd rather see them make the playoffs than, like, I don't know, random American team A or B, right?
Yeah. Like, it's, you know, then let's say, like, you know, Nashville's making the playoffs. But,
yeah, who cares? You know, like, who cares about Nashville?
Yeah. Nashville's super. Like, the city, I want to visit the city because it's apparently just a tremendous city. But the team itself, like, I don't care. I don't care. Yeah. I don't care. But Vancouver, yeah, they're, I'm just looking at it now, Show. I think you'd have to have Dallas lose out because Vancouver's at 87 points. Dallas is at 93. They both have three games left to play. And Vancouver's lost their last three. So it's probably Dunsky for the Canucks. But I'm looking at this. If we're looking at playoff matchups for Toronto, Show, like, I'm trying to figure out, I think Boston, yeah, could still overtake Tampa Bay for the third spot. I kind of want that more than the Leafs playing Tampa in the first round, don't you think?
Yeah, than the Leafs playing the two-time defending Stanley Cup champion? Yes.
I do want that. I know there's the specter, though, of, like, the Boston Bruins, but I feel, look, if you got to pick one, you might as well try the Bruins, who aren't what they used to be. Still, look, 101 points. Come on. You know, they're not slugs by any means. But at least then, maybe you could kill two birds with one stone. You can finally win a damn playoff series, and you could beat the Bruins. You know? I think that would be more appealing. And we want to try to avoid Tampa Bay as long as possible. Or, Show, they could play either one and still lose, and then we're back to the exact same stuff. Same conversation, all yeah. that, right? It very well could
be. I'm not trying to be like the doom and gloom person, because if there was ever a year for the Leafs to make it out of the first round with the way the roster is constructed, it's this year. I genuinely believe that. I think this team is like genuinely mentally tougher than teams in years past, and you know, I don't know. I mean, people might not agree with that, but especially with their penchant for blowing leads, and that still hasn't really like gone away. And obviously, they
especially
got
against
just.
Florida.
They got waxed by the Lightning a couple of days ago. I get it. But at the same time, and I said this to you before, both on and off the air, but I feel like if the Leafs lose in, I don't know, like, let's say they lose in six games to the Lightning, or they lose in six games to, like, let's say they do, no, they're not going to win the division. I don't think they can anymore. So let's say they lose in six games to another team, or in seven games to another team. I don't really see the argument for blowing the team up. You know what I mean? Like, I don't really see it at this point. I think we were having those conversations at the beginning of the year, and I remember I was talking to Raj, like Roger Lajoie, and our conversations were kind of along the lines of, well, do you really want to, like, axe everyone, axe the general manager, the president? Do you really want to trade away one of the three stars or two of the four stars or whatever just to, like, not finish with the same amount of points and same amount of wins next year and still lose in the first round anyways? Like, that's, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, unless it was a truly embarrassing loss in the first round. And frankly, I mean, unless you're getting swept in four games and you're losing, like, 8-1 every game, I mean, losing to the two-time defending Stanley Cup champions, I don't know. That's not, like, that's not the most embarrassing thing in the world. Again, it depends on how it might happen, but And here's another thing. I think the Leafs can beat them. I think it's I don't know how likely it is, but I think it's possible.
Well, now it's, I guess, Show, again, it really comes down to, I said this last week and I'll say it again, where does this organization see itself as a true contender? Internally. Outwardly, they'll say, where do they internally see them? Do they see themselves as Stanley Cup champions? Do you see yourself as a legitimate get to the finals? Not even what get to the finals type of team. If you do, then you have to beat great teams. Tampa Bay isn't afraid of anybody. They're afraid of nobody. So you can't be afraid of anybody. You got to win tough series. I don't think this is a case where it's like, okay, if you lose, it's all right. It won't be, it won't feel good. It won't be good, but okay, it's the champ. You got to win these tough games. So let's see how tough these guys are. If you lose, I will still, I'm with you. I think the team has shown enough to not be blown up, but then you really have to look at this brain trust and it's like, okay, now you got last year where you had the table set with that COVID division alignment. Table set for you to do it, and you failed. Okay, now you had a tough one this year. So what are we doing? What's the missing piece? You go with these veteran guys. Thornton didn't work out. You know, where's the missing piece? That's what the brain trust has to figure out. And they haven't figured it out yet. And if you lose in the first round, Show, ultimately, however it looks, you did not figure that out yet. So that's going to be the big question if they fail. What's the missing piece with this organization? But, you know, we're going to have to wait and see who they play.
It's also possible that I have like Stockholm syndrome, and I've just talked myself into the fact that I'll just be watching this team until I die. So I'll probably maybe at this point doesn't really matter anymore.
We'll watch no matter what.
I'm in. I'm handcuffed. I'm shackled to this team for the rest of my life. Unfortunately, so here we go. Right?
Like, we're not going to watch.
Yeah, like that. That's kind of why, like, I kind of half like joke, but I kind of why I make that argument that like maybe you shouldn't blow up the team because you know what? If this team is going to be not making the first round, let me at least have some fun in the regular season where I get to watch Austin Matthews like break records and you know set all time records and this and that and the other thing in the regular season, even if they don't win the win the Stanley Cup in my lifetime.
God, well, I don't know. I'll still watch regardless as well, show, but Austin Matthews is a ton of fun. You know what? Let's break. We're going to talk some fantasy football. Debo Samuel wants out of San Francisco. What? Okay. Well, we'll talk about that. Huh? We'll talk about Debo, some NFL draft prospect, other news and notes from around the NFL. Get you thinking about your fantasy football team, NFL draft coming up top of the hour. Rich Dotson from Dynasty Nerds to talk about those prospects. Who should you be keeping your eye on for your Dynasty team, for your redraft league? Whatever the case might be, and some more fantasy baseball coming up when the Fantasy Show continues across the Sportsnet Radio Network.
This is the Fantasy Show with Andy McNamara and Show Ali on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
All right, we're rolling with the Fantasy Show across the Sportsnet Radio Network, entering NFL Draft Week, people. Cannot wait. I'm Andy McNamara, that's Show Ali. Get us on Twitter, give us a follow. At AndyMC81, at SNSLE, and at The Fantasy Show. Let's go! I'm going to be in Vegas, show. I'm leaving Wednesday morning for our NFL draft party, courtesy of UFFSports.com. You guys want to jump in and partay with us? Just go to the site, UFFSports.com. You can find out about our college, brand new college fantasy football dynasty league as well that you can register to bid on one of the professional franchises there. But, show, I'm pretty pumped. Going, flying out to Vegas, staying at the Circa, and ready to roll at the Stadium Swim and Legacy Club with some apparently some NFL draft prospects are going to be on site as well. We don't know which ones, but ones that aren't at the stadium, some are going to be going around. So maybe Christian Watson will be there, and I can profess my combine crush to him in person, and then be escorted out by security.
I hope that the only people there are punters and kickers. I hope it's like the highest drafted punter. I hope that's the guy who's there.
Oh, you know what? I'm going to look up right now who's like the what's the highest draft grade on a kicker?
Let me guess. Here, let me tell you. Here's my over under. No one will be drafted. No punter will be drafted higher than the fifth round. That's my guess.
I think that's very fair. let's see. Specialist, the highest grade is Cade York out of LSU.
All right.
6'1", 206. What are his hands? 8 3/4. Still bigger than Kenny Pickett's.
All right.
Too bad, Kenny. Cade York out of LSU is a 5th to 6th round grade.
There you go.
Whoa. Now hold on here. Maybe I will take this wager.
All right.
Because punters, Matt Ariza out of San Diego State.
Okay.
Has a 3rd to 4th round grade.
Get out of here. There's no chance he's getting drafted in the third round. There's a, I don't know who put that grade on him, but you know what? Shame.
Shame.
You know what? What's that Michael Jordan gif? Like, stop it.
Get some help.
No, it's
third to fourth round grade.
No way. No chance.
Wow. You know what? We should put something on that show.
Andy, the only person in the entire NFL who would draft, like the only actual player personnel person who would draft a punter in the third round is like Bill Belichick. I don't think there's another human being alive today who would draft a punter in the third round.
It might have been the Raiders in the late Al Davis' day, because remember, he did draft Jenikowski, first round pick.
That's true.
But he had a great career.
But I'm saying, like, I think drafting a punter that high is, even for Al Davis, is probably,
that would be,
come on.
That would be rich. Like, you would have to have the most complete team, and you're like, we don't need anything else. We need nothing else. Let's do that. You know, there would just be,
Maybe the Browns and their dream team.
We do need a punter.
Might, the dream team, The fantastic undefeated Browns might need a punter, Andy.
Ooh, and the hand size of these three punters projected to be drafted show 9.5, 9 3/8, 9.5. I think they should swap. Whoever Kenny Pickett goes, get one of these guys in.
I have never spoken about hand size more at any point in my life than I have with you.
Than Kenny Pickett. Poor Kenny. Poor Kenny Pickett. I just picture like Cartman saying in South Park saying Kenny. I'm sure he's a very nice man. I'm sure he's very nice. I feel bad.
I hope he goes to the Steelers and dominates.
I hope he does go to the Steelers so Myles Garrett can smack his tiny baby hands the ball out of it. That's what I hope happens. Just not Desmond Ritter.
Miles Garrett. Oh, yeah, you're right. I hope Desmond Ritter also goes. I hope they both go to the Steelers. I hope they draft two quarterbacks.
I do, too. That'd be a tremendous waste of resources. That'd be great. Let's do that. So those are the – when you're talking about – the kickers punter show, there are only three kickers with draft grades at all. Most kickers and punters, as we know, go undrafted, whatever.
Yep.
Cade York, Gabe, I'm not sure how you, B-R-K-I-C, Brookish, Cameron Dicker, that's fun. Okay. That's fun to say. And then for punters, Matt Areza, Jordan Stout, and Jake Camarda out of Georgia. So keep your eye on that, folks. Keep your eye on that. Okay. On we should do, I don't know what the contest could be, but we should do something where maybe we could do like an over under sort of prop play on the draft and give away some Domino's pizza. What will be the highest round that a kicker or punter is drafted? And set the over under.
What's your guess? What's your guess, Andy?
I'm going to say fifth round. I think fifth round is when the first kicker or punter goes.
Well, so we'd have to set it at like 4.5 or 5.5, basically, right?
Right. So would we say sometime in the fifth round or above, or like fifth round or up or below fifth round? Is that, if we word it like that, does that make sense?
Yeah, like I would probably say 4.5, right? Because if you're picking below that, then you're probably picking the before the fifth round, and if you're picking above that, you're picking fifth round and above, I would guess, right? So
right, okay, so we can say something like that. We'll put that out there, folks. Where do you think the first kicker and punter will go? Show says after the fifth round. I say in or above the fifth round. So we'll see. Cade York, we can ask. You know, not very fantasy relevant for most leagues, but you do need kickers, and sometimes show, listen, if you get Justin Tucker, that dude's getting you a lot of fantasy points, right?
Is he getting a lot of fantasy points? Like, I was just thinking back to last year. Like, I guess if you had Justin Tucker, I don't know if you had Nick Folk. He was really good last year. Who else? Harrison Butker is usually pretty reliable. Will Lutz is pretty reliable. Less so last year because the offense was a little weird. But still, I mean, like,
the legs on the downturn.
There are always going to be like the fantasy kickers who you get. Generally speaking, I mean, I know that in fantasy sports, there are always, generally speaking, consensus, like, discussions for the top five guys. But for kickers, I feel like unless the quarterback changes or unless the coaching staff changes, I feel like for the most part, they're going to stay pretty static year over year. And then you have special cases like Justin Tucker, where it probably doesn't even really matter who he plays for, what offense he plays for, because any team that has him, any offensive mind that has him, is going to be comfortable trotting him out for like a 60-yard field goal whenever, essentially, right? So, you know, he's like a – I almost feel like if you're doing tiers, Justin Tucker is in a tier of his own, essentially.
He is. He's the number one tier. He's going to be a future Hall of Famer, I would say, like, no doubt when it comes to kickers. Just spectacular. Future 99-rated star in the American Football Legends League show. You can watch the three games today on – UFF Sports Twitch channel, by the way. You can go twitch.tv/ultimatefantasysports. Watch our Legends Esports League there. That's lots of fun. NFL news, though. Debo Samuel, we teased it earlier. Earlier in the week show, word coming out, he wants out of town. And he wants to get paid because, remember, Debo Samuel was a second-round pick. That means, show, he's getting second-round pick money. That is much less than first-round money. So Debo Samuel is putting up incredible statistics as a second-round pick. The 49ers are just loving life with the value they're getting out of him. And he wants to get paid. The internal discussions, I suppose, his agent is finding out maybe the 49ers don't want to pay him, which I don't know why he wouldn't, but he apparently wants out of town. And the 49ers are in a weird spot because you have Jimmy Garoppolo still. You drafted Trey Lance. It doesn't sound like the confidence level is super high in Trey Lance, but Jimmy Garoppolo's sort of like a lame duck quarterback again. So the 49ers are in a very weird situation.
I find it interesting, the Debo stuff. I'm not like, I guess I am surprised that he asked out because, you know, how often does that happen? And I think we are moving closer to the world that the NBA is in where, like, players realize the kind of power they have, right? And I think, and I'll always be in favor of the players, you know, going out and getting as much money as humanly possible, especially in the NFL where contracts are, like, for the most part, not guaranteed, right? Like, it's starting to change in the last couple of years. I feel like Kirk Cousins' contract changed that in a big way for quarterbacks, right? Like, when he first signed with Minnesota. With Debo Samuel, it's interesting because he has not been healthy for a full season, I think, ever. Is that right? Like, ever in his career? I know his career is, like, pretty short. Like, he's a pretty young guy, so it's not like he's been playing in the NFL for, like, years and years and years. But at the same time, he's gotten injured. What's that?
This was his third season. He played 15 games as a rookie, 7 in 2020, and 16 of 17 last year. But he has been at least every week. Like, so maybe it's one of those guys like Julio Jones, who when you look at actual games played, it's more than you expect, but he's like always listed with something on the injury list.
Right.
You know?
So I think that's totally fair, and I think that is to a degree true. And I think, I kind of get the complaints, not complaints, but I kind of get like the viewpoints of both sides here, right? Because there was that report that Debo wanted like top wide receiver money, and the 49ers were offering him like $18 to $19 million a year, which obviously is a lot of money, but he wanted like a minimum of $25 million. And I guess in part because they were using him not just as a wide receiver, but as a running back, right? They were using him in both roles. And again, they were using him as a running back, kind of in part because of all the injuries, right? I mean, we were talking about Eli Mitchell earlier. Jermichael Hasty was injured. Mitchell himself was injured. Trey Sermon was injured. Everyone under the sun who ran balls for the 49ers was injured, apparently. And so they had Debo do it. So you know what? If you're doing both roles and you're very good at it, I would also demand top wide receiver money if they're going to continue using it in those roles. And I just find, so I can get both viewpoints here, because I guess the 49ers might view him and say, well, you've been injured a lot. Why would we want to pay you like a top wide receiver if you're not going to be healthy? And then he says, all right, well, then I want out. And I guess I was reading some reports that it's not even really about the money, right? It's just like, I don't even know it's about, like, if it's a culture thing or if he just doesn't agree with how they view his role on the team. But it does beg the question, like, let's just say, right? Let's just say he gets traded to the Jets, which I again think makes way too much sense because of Saleh there and
right.
You know, all the staff that's there that knows him so well, Joe Douglas and so on in the front office and so on. I think that makes way too much sense. But if he gets traded to the Jets and his ask is that he doesn't want to do running back duties anymore, he only wants to be treated as a wide receiver, doesn't that kind of make him, like, from a fantasy perspective, doesn't that kind of make him less valuable?
It does. And I guess, it really depends on if that dual role bothered him, because in a sense, if he didn't have that dual role show, like, okay, granted, look, the guy had over 1,400 receiving yards alone last year. So standing alone, he's a stud wide receiver. But then you mixed in the 365 rushing yards, and he had more rushing touchdowns in 8 than receiving touchdowns 6. So I think from Debo's standpoint, his agent should be marketing him as a weapon. He's an offensive weapon. Doesn't have to be a receiver, doesn't have to be a running back. He is a weapon that you want on the field, because then you can use him anywhere. What do defenses have to do? Well, I don't have to just worry about Debo Samuel with my top cornerback. I got to worry about him from my linebacker core, from my defense. Is he going to go around the edge? What is he going to be doing? And show not you take the yards per carry with a bit of a grain of salt when you have, you know, less than 150. But in 59 carries last year, Debo Samuel averaged 6.2 yards a carry. Like, that's dirty, right? Come on. Those of you who do,
he was
like,
great.
If you're at 4.5 yards per carry as a pure running back, you're doing excellent. And he's 6.2 with 8 touchdowns. So, I don't know. The Jets, I agree with you as far as the coaching staff. I just feel like if he goes to the Jets, they'd screw him up, though. Maybe that's just because the Jets are always bad.
Yeah.
Don't you think? It's like,
the Jets have only been good in our lifetimes for, like, essentially for, like, 2 years when Mark Sanchez was there and they went to
butt
the
fumble.
AFC Championship game. Like, yeah. Yeah. And in those years, we got the butt fumble and other hilarious memeable moments. So it's the butt fumble, Andy, is on a completely separate note, is something that on the darkest of days will put a smile on my face. Honest
Always.
To God. That is one of the funniest things I've ever seen, I think, in the history of professional sports. Certainly in the history of the NFL.
It's so good.
But you know what I mean? Like, what? Like, I agree with you that he should be looking to, like, going to a team and saying, I'm a weapon. I'm not a wide receiver. I'm a weapon. Use me any way you like. But I'm just saying, like, if a part of the conversation to teams and to the 49ers themselves are that he doesn't want to run the ball anymore, he only wants to be a pure wide receiver because also wide receivers make more money. If that's how he wants to be viewed, then I remember at the end of the season, you and I were talking about, like, hey, where does someone like Deebo Samuel go in a redraft league? Like, where do you take, how high do you take him? And if he is healthy and he has the same role as he did last year, I think he, like, there's an argument you could take him at the end of the first round, beginning of the second round, probably, I would say, right? Like, but if you axe however many yards he had and you axe those 8 rushing touchdowns, even if you add on 2 more receiving touchdowns to his receiving totals, you're still losing out on 6 total touchdowns. That's not an insignificant amount of fantasy points, right? Like, that's enough to make the difference between someone you draft in the second round and someone you draft in, like, I don't know, the 4th or 5th round, maybe.
Well, the thing is, too, what I would like, you know, I love my dual position eligibility show. I think you've got to put Deebo with the WR/RB designation this year. I think Fantasy League should. I think that's a must, because that changes the conversation big time. If you put a dual, it's very rare in fantasy football, but the odd time you get that double, Cordarrelle Patterson had it for a little bit at the start of the year, right? You got that double designation. Imagine if you keep Deebo with dual, and you put that dual position, what does that do to his value? I think that bumps him up even higher, show, because then you got, my goodness, you could get wide receiver production out of a running back. And really, if he had more rushing touchdowns than receiving touchdowns, I think it's a viable argument. I think you should put that, you know, Yahoo, ESPN, whoever, should be having Deebo Samuel with both position eligibility. I think that'd be a potential game changer in fantasy redraft leagues.
If he does get traded, and he gets traded to a team that doesn't use him as a running back, because I agree with you that he probably will go into the season with dual eligibility. How funny would it be, like, if you drafted him with that in mind, and then they took it away? Because those sites can do that, right? Because, like, ESPN and Yahoo can add, and they can also take away eligibility for, like, those dual guys.
Take it away.
Yeah, so, hey, I mean, I kind of think when it's all said and done, Deebo will probably just stay in San Fran, and they'll
probably
pay, like, instead of, you know, he doesn't want to be paid $19 million. He wants $25 million. They'll compromise. He'll get like $22 million with some incentives and you know what I mean, like escalators in coming years and so on, and that'll be that, and he'll end up running the ball a little less or something like that, right? So I think,
you know what, I think it'll be a good spot, show. I got a spot for him.
Go for it.
Not the Jets. I think the Eagles. I think the Philadelphia Eagles. You put him in. Imagine that, how dynamic this offense is. You have Jalen Hurts, who's still growing and learning, but very mobile. You got Miles Sanders at running back. You have Devonta Smith. Now, they signed Zach Pascal. Let's, you know, not get excited here. Quez Watkins is your number two. You're not winning squat with that, right? You have Dallas Goedert still as the tight end. Imagine mixing in a Deebo Samuel. So now, if you're an opposing defense, now you're looking at it, you could line up Deebo backfield alongside Miles Sanders. You could line him up inside, outside. You can put Devonta Smith outside, inside. You know, and just where would defenses look to go? Because Jalen Hurts can run it, or he can throw it too. I think it would cause potential chaos for opposition. If you add someone of Deebo Samuel's caliber to that team, that would be super exciting. I think it would almost be like video game watch. Like, okay, well, what are they going to do? Yeah, I think that would be a lot. And I believe their salary cap situation is good because Jalen Hurts is still on his rookie deal.
Yeah, no, it is. It definitely is. I think, I feel like if there is a trade, you're not going to see it until after the draft, or maybe even at the draft, right? Because you know, I feel like a lot of people have mocked, and again, this is going to be one of those years where mock drafts end up meaning nothing because they're going to be like a million trades, and no one really knows who's going to be the number one overall pick. Like, it could be Aiden Hutchinson, it could be Kayvon Thibodeau, it could be Trayvon Walker, who knows who's going to be, right? So I feel like of all years, this is going to be the year where, like, who the hell knows which team takes what? But I do think that the Eagles have been, like, a lot of people are saying that they're going to take a receiver, right? Like, they're going to take whoever the highest receiver is available, which would be, I guess, like, the third straight year they're taking a receiver. And, I mean, look, Devonta Smith had a, like, I mean, it, certainly he was overshadowed by Ja'Marr Chase because Ja'Marr Chase had, like, a season for the ages. But Devonta Smith had, like, a quietly good season considering he was on a team that ran the ball for the most part all the time, right? So I think that with a shift towards that and getting more weapons for Jalen Hurts, they could very easily pick a wide receiver, or they could just trade that pick and take on Deebo Samuel, which I agree with you. Although if Deebo Samuel does go to Philly and he does end up running the ball, doesn't that just kill the value of Miles Sanders? It does, right?
Destroys,
like, that's
it.
What would happen.
Destroys.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like we're dropping Miles Sanders down into full committee mode, which he Boy, he's kind of borderline that already, because you still have, remember too, you have Kenneth Gainwell, who super talented show, but the lack of pass protection, and we'll talk to Rich Dotson about this coming up in just a couple minutes, but I believe another Kenneth Walker III, who's one of the top, if not the top running back along with Breece Hall in this draft, a problem he could run into, his pass protection is no good, and he has trouble catching the football. That immediately eliminates you on third down. That immediately means you need a third down back. You're not going to be a bell cow, and it limits your fantasy value. That's what Kenneth Gainwell's at. That might be where Kenneth Walker becomes, too, as a from fantasy purposes, something we got to watch.
Real quick, Andy, let's just say for the sake of this discussion that Deebo Samuel moves on and he doesn't play next year for San Fran. Is the receiver to own really Brandon Ayuk in San Fran? I'm not sold on Ayuk. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not saying he's bad by any means. Like, he's obviously good. He's obviously a very good player. It's just like, I don't know. Like, I know last year was probably his best season, but I just feel like he still has yet to put together a string of games where I'm like, yeah, man, that guy, I'm going to take him and keep him on my fantasy team for the whole season. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not sold on him yet.
No, he's a Deebo Samuel light to me. He's kind of like a lesser version of Deebo Samuel. They're built, if you look physically, as far as height, weight, and even speed, if you took their names away, you're like, who's who? Nearly identical. Doesn't have that dynamic presence yet. And maybe there's still time. Now, remember, Brandon Ayuk as a rookie had injuries coming in. So he took a while to develop, and then that rookie year, you know, you lose that rookie year, some pace to it. He only played 12 games, came in, never got his footing fully. Last year, 826 receiving yards, which is, and 5 touchdowns, which is, you know, not really anything to get excited about. This is a big year for him. If he stays fully healthy, then maybe there is a chance that he can take that step forward. But right now, I'm with you. He's a, I don't know, he's kind of maybe a flex guy you want on your team, but you're not going to reach for him, and you're not going to be disappointed if you don't have, at least where he stands right now.
Yeah, you're probably right. I don't think his, like, if Deebo Samuel goes, he's out of necessity, his draft stock will shoot up. But as it stands right now, like, you know, probably middle rounds, I would guess, right now.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's pretty fair. But you know what? We'll talk some more fantasy football. Let's take the break. Our guy Rich Dotson from DynastyNerds.com. Get you ready. What draft prospects are we looking at? What strategy should we be taking heading in to the upcoming fantasy football season? Rich Dotson from Dynasty Nerds will join us next at the top of the hour when the fantasy show continues across the Sportsnet Radio Network.
This is the Fantasy Show with Andy McNamara and Show Ali on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Hour 2 of the Fantasy Show kicks off right now across the Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm Andy McNamara, alongside Show Ali. Get us on Twitter at AndyMC81, at SNSLE, at The Fantasy Show. Make sure, hey, you find us wherever you get your podcasts. You can just go subscribe so you never miss an episode. And it's fantasy football season. It's NFL draft season. The draft is this week. And I know my next guest, alongside with me, is going to make sure at some point to mix in some time to watch the greatest sports movie ever made, and that is Draft Day with Kevin Costner, focused around the Cleveland Browns, and that is Cleveland's own God's Country, Rich Dotson from Dynasty Nerds. Rich, how you doing, buddy?
Andy, I'm doing well. Thanks for having me back on.
Absolutely, man. Been way too long. Great to have you. I'm being serious. Every year, me and my dad, we make it a tradition. We watch draft day. I'm hoping you will do the same. We got to get into the mood with Sonny Weaver Jr., Vontae Mack, no matter what. Are you ready?
It was one of the most exciting movies I was waiting for to come out, and then it came out, and I still watch it. It's not my draft day tradition, but just the one scene in that movie, Andy, where the new GM, I think it was the Jaguars, he's like, I just don't know what to do. I was like, okay, come on, buddy.
That was great. That is fitting, though, with the Jaguars. Our technical director is a Jags fan, so I always like bringing that up as well, so that's an extra little bonus. But Rich, look, it is draft week. And this is the time of year for whether it's redraft you're scouting or for dynasty leagues. Now we have to start, I guess, narrowing down. Okay, which prospects do we like? Do we love? And then the toughest part is kind of balancing them and matching them up their value once they get drafted. Because a perfect example, Rich, last year, Trey Sermon of the 49ers, a lot of people liked him, and not a lot of people saw Elijah Mitchell coming. So imagine if you had him on your team. What's your strategy going into this draft season?
Yeah, it's really just finding where the talented players are. And obviously, Landon's spot is going to be huge as well. You don't want to draft a running back and he ends up behind Jonathan Taylor, right? Because it doesn't matter how much you love him,
yep,
he's not getting the carries. And sometimes it's about putting the time in and finding the right resources to make sure the guys that have the eyes on them know what they're, like, kind of the information they're giving to you. We tried to do it over at Dynasty Nerds. Sam, you made a good example last year of Trey Sermon. You know, the 49ers traded up for him. They take Elijah Mitchell and back in the sixth round out of Louisiana Lafayette, and it's Elijah Mitchell that comes in and has a big year. So sometimes that's just where the person gets drafted. It's just about the player's overall talent as well. This year, speaking of running backs, I mean, we had a couple of really good running backs, whether you're playing dynasty or redraft. Of course, for redraft, the instant impact of these young legs can be huge benefits paying down the road for your fantasy football teams. Guys like Breece Hall, Kenneth Walker, Damian Pierce, Isaiah Spiller might come into this 2022 season and give you instant impact to your fantasy football lineups, especially Breece Hall, who has the potential to be a running back one right out the gates.
Yeah, when you look at the running back situations, Rich, and you look at the other, like you mentioned four names right there, and you look at guys like James Cook after them, or maybe you look at Alabama's Brian Robinson, right? Because for every Alabama running back like Najee Harris, you have, you have someone like, I don't know, Trent Richardson, right? Like there are good ones and there are bad ones, and as you might imagine, it happens at every position. But I just, you look at all some of the lesser known running backs. Do you think there are any real diamonds in the roughs there that could depend on what their landing spot is? Or do you think maybe after those four you mentioned, Hall and Spiller and Pierce and Walker, that maybe, you know, it, we're talking about guys who are in committee situations at best here?
Yeah, that's today's NFL. That's today's NFL, right? Committee backfields. That's one of those, like, top five guys that are three down backs are so valuable. But you can still win with a committee back. I mean, we saw backfields like Cleveland's over the last 2 years with Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt on the field, splitting carries, both being running back ones for multiple weeks of the season. So this year, there's still some opportunity, you know, a little bit of the yin with the yang, and guys like Zamir White, running back out of Georgia, 6 foot, kind of play that Nick Chubb role. Real big guy, 6 foot, 214 pounds, but has some really good lateral agility. Coming off two ACL tears, he's 2 years removed from that. But just like Nick Chubb tore his ACL, this is a big running back out of the same school that's really fast. Comes in, runs a 4.4 40, so he's not going to catch a lot of footballs. So in PPR leagues, Zamir White won't be as valuable. But then there's some outside guys like Rashad White out of West Virginia. Maybe gets paired up with Derrick Henry in Tennessee. That'd be a great fit for him. Same thing like James Cook, that pass catcher running back that could help Derrick Henry, who's starting to get a little bit older as he gets closer, a little bit closer to 30, which is downhill for these running backs. And then there's also a running back by the name of Tyler Beatty. He's a little electric. I'd like to see where he ends up as well, to see if there's a team that he could be that third down running back with the possibility of an injury to come and be a three down back and kind of give you that 3 week boost.
In conversation with Rich Dotson on Twitter at Dynasty Rich from DynastyNerds.com. And Rich, a situation where, and it really does depend, and maybe more so this year than others, is, yeah, like we were talking about, the landing spot of these running backs. Yeah, you don't want a guy who's behind Jonathan Taylor, but to your point, okay, maybe someone behind Derrick Henry with real upside coming off that injury, that might be enticing. And then you also have to look at the situation, because what really
stands out to me is Kenneth Gainwell from last year. All the talent, but he had trouble in pass protection. Well, that's pretty important in today's NFL, and that then, from a fantasy perspective, keeps him off the field from third down. And that's something you also have to keep into account. Can these guys catch out of the backfield? Can they pass protect? Because if that's a struggle, or they can't, or the team doesn't think they can, then you're also suffering. So that's where, like, a Kenneth Walker, really, out of Michigan State, I think really has to up his game. And then again, yeah, the committee, because as we see, like, true bell cows, Rich, right? Like, Najee Harris, Jonathan Taylor, Derrick Henry when healthy. And then after that, there's not a whole lot of true, you know, I'm going to get the ball on three downs type of running backs in the NFL now.
Yeah, it's slim pickings out there in today's NFL. Yeah. The NFL offenses are moving so much forward than college offenses and having that third down scat back. So get one of those guys, it's literally fantasy football gold, and there's a reason why they go in the top five picks to get guys like Christian McCaffrey to come out there. Was Zeke, but he lost his stature there. So finding those guys that just have that opportunity alone is going to be a good fit for any running back this year. There's not a lot left on the NFL this year. You know, like Atlanta would be a really good landing spot. Seattle's got Rashad Penny, but that's another really good land spot too that's going to run the football. This would be the true number one running back. Houston's wide open this year. But you're right, Andy. Besides that, there's not a lot of opportunity for these guys to even come in and step in and be the day one three-down running back.
You know, Rich, one of the things of this draft that we're – I feel like we've talked just ad nauseum about over the last month and maybe more, honestly – is this class of wide receivers, right? And apparently, I guess this is supposed to be one of the better wide receiver classes in recent memory. Now, I guess there's no Jamar Chase or Justin Jefferson, but I'm curious, you know, we were just talking about landing spots, and obviously we have to wait until the draft to make these determinations, but you look at the Packers and the Chiefs, right? Of course, Devontae Adams no longer with Green Bay. He's in Las Vegas. And Tyreek Hill no longer with KC. He's down in Miami. Do you think we're at the point now where, let's just say, any of the top 10 wide receivers get drafted with either of the picks that either KC or Green Bay have in the first round? Are we at the point where, basically for fantasy purposes, any one of those guys they drafted is probably going to have their draft stock and in redraft and dynasty leagues essentially shoot through the roof?
Yeah, I've been talking about that a lot lately. We're going to see that Green Bay Kansas City bump. I've been saying on podcasts now for a couple of weeks now, talking, breaking these rookies down, saying no matter what we do and what we say about these guys, the Garrett Wilsons, the Jameson Williams, the Drake Londons, the Treylon Burks, those guys are going to take it higher up in the draft, right? They're probably going to go to Atlanta, the New York Jets, these wide receiver teams needed earlier ahead of the Chiefs and ahead of the Packers. So maybe a Jahan Dotson, a Christian Watson, or Treylon Burks falls to them in the back half of the draft. Those guys are going to get bumps because, and rightfully so. I mean, Andy, right now the Green Bay Packers do not have a number one wide receiver on their roster. They have Sammy Watkins, who they signed recently. Their number one old option is going to be the tight end and Robert Tonyan. So whatever receiver goes there should rightfully get a bump because you're going to go in with an NFL MVP, a very accurate quarterback who does not throw the football over, who's going to be funneling you targets. And just like we like these three-down running backs because they get all the carries, same thing for the receivers. If you can find yourself a receiver that's going to see more targets than the rest of the team, to be a true alpha receiver, we see it almost in San Francisco, right? Like Deebo Samuel was the alpha receiver there. It's just as rare to have the alpha receiver as it is to have the alpha running back. So whatever receiver goes to the Green Bay Packers has the potential to be that wide receiver. And if you catch 110, 115 footballs, you're going to end up a wide receiver one, and that's something that's going to really propel you to that fantasy football championship that we're coveting.
That's a tremendous point, Rich. I think you're spot on. Yeah, there are wide open vacancies for just a rookie to jump in and go. And look, we've seen guys like Justin Jefferson, Deebo Samuel be able to step right in and be star. Of course, Jamar Chase, obviously. Now let's look at day two, guys, for the receiver portion here, Rich. And part of that is our Cleveland Browns have a second, you know, they don't have a first round pick because they used it in part of the Deshaun Watson deal. Those day two guys, and I don't think he's going to anymore, but I was praying come out of the combine that Christian Watson would fall to 44 and the Browns could scoop him up and I would weep tears of joy. Doesn't look like that's going to be likely. What are a couple of those day two, those second round players who you think at wide receiver might fit a team like Cleveland or any other team that maybe skips on a wide receiver, maybe goes defense in that first round, tries to circle back?
Yeah, I think wide receiver Jahan Dotson out of Penn State is a good opportunity for the slip at the top end of that second round. Real electric receiver, 5'11", 178 pounds. But, I mean, it's a guy who's fast, won really, really good routes. He has very, very good hands. He only had two drops throughout his entire career there. Just a real polished wide receiver to come in with quick feet and help the NFL team win right away. So he's a person to go if you want to wait and go to the top end of the second round, probably the trade up to get a guy like him. He offers a lot of upside there. Christian Watson still has an opportunity to fall out of the second round after that combine. I know it was pretty electric, but there's still a chance he might fall out of the first round as well, depending on what receivers sneak up there. I think there's two guys that offer a lot of upside. I think wide receiver Alec Pierce has late round two, maybe early round three upside too. A big wide receiver, Andy, a guy that can go up there and get the football really fast in today's NFL. He's a prime example of what they're looking for. 6'3", 211 pounds, ran a 4.41. Which is getting really fast for his size and tracks the ball really well. So he's a round three, late round two prospect that offers a lot of fantasy football upside with speed and size. Those are three guys that I think are a couple guys that I think are really high end fantasy football prospects that might not go day one.
I like that for, I hope it's size. I hope it's size for the Browns. Give Deshaun Watson a big, big old target. Last one for you here, Rich. Let's talk quarterbacks. And we know this is a quarterback class on paper where it's not as exciting as in recent years. There's no Joe Burrow. There's no Trevor Lawrence type. There's a lot of questions. A quarterback is not going to go first overall unless something really weird happens. The big names, Kenny Pickett, Malik Willis. I love me some Desmond Ridder, Rich. I love Desmond Ridder. And I just hope and pray, I've told Show this, that he does not go to the Pittsburgh Steelers because I think that could be a problem for the AFC North. When you look at these quarterbacks, and again, obviously depends on landing spot. We can look real quick side note. Just look back at the 2018 draft with, imagine if Josh Allen went to the New York Jets instead of the Buffalo Bills in a stable situation. You could have a totally rewritten history. So it depends largely on those quarterbacks where you end up. But which ones for fantasy sort of stand out? Like outside of Malik Willis's maybe legs day one, I personally don't necessarily see anybody from a year one perspective, but are there quarterbacks you think dynasty wise you want to, depending where they go, you want to keep an eye on and grab?
Yeah, this is the roughest class I've ever had to sit down and really kind of look at from a dynasty perspective, because nobody really like jumps out at you as like, hey, this is the guy that I want to lead my NFL franchise. Do they all have upside? Absolutely. But there's a lot of questions about all these guys coming out. You mentioned Malik Willis out of Liberty. Yeah, he offers the most upside because of his legs, and his legs are his biggest asset, and that can get it done from a fantasy football perspective. And everybody's going to say, you know, his accuracy is accuracy, but Josh Allen, he turned it around. But, you know, Josh Allen's the outlier. It's one of the hardest things to correct is accuracy at the next level. So for me, from a dynasty aspect, it has to be a super flex league too. I'm going to try and grab some of these guys by the middle of the second round of my rookie picks, but Kenny Pickett offers some upside of Allen kind of be like a Kirk Cousins-esque quarterback where he's a slow riser. After about 5, 6, 7 years in the league, he'll probably give you a couple quarterback one seasons in the right situation. Desmond Ridder's another quarterback that's got some good zip on the ball, Andy. Really good athlete, too. So he's really good outside of pocket, offers some upside with his legs as well. So those are probably the top three guys in Willis, Pickett, and Ridder. But then you got other guys on the outside like Matt Corral that some teams are like for the NFL team. But I think the NFL has kind of shown us what they think of this quarterback class too, Andy. I mean, they're kind of all pivoting to that 23 class. If you're Carolina Panthers, if you're Atlanta, why not take the cornerback, the offensive tackle, the defensive end where this class is strong on? You know your team's not going to take a big step forward with any of these quarterbacks most likely anyways, and wait till the 2023 class to grab, put yourself in position for a C.J. Stroud, a Bryce Young, with a quarterback class much stronger. I think with all the sign of these NFL quarterbacks, Jimmy Garoppolo still out there, Baker Mayfield out there, guys like Mariota, Carson Wentz, Mitch Trubisky still getting their opportunities. I think the NFL is kind of trying to tell us, hey, we're not going to push the quarterbacks this year, and we're going to kind of see how they fall to us. Maybe we'll get good value in the second round and wait for that 23 class. And with a quarterback without getting first-round pedigree, that insulation of that first-round pick, it's kind of hard to be excited about them in dynasty fantasy football, let alone redraft fantasy football.
Yeah.
No, you're absolutely right. Rich, before we let you go, let people know where they can find all the great work you and the team are doing at DynastyNerds.com, because you're ready for mock draft season, then fantasy football season. You guys go all year round.
Yeah, yeah. You ever need a mock draft, you got the Dynasty Nerds mock draft app in your toolbox, app store. Just check out the Dynasty Nerds website, DynastyNerds.com, where we get you fantasy football 365 days a year, give you the opportunity to study these rookies that Andy and I were talking about in our film room, and all the articles that you can handle, and a lot of great tools at DynastyNerds.com. And if you just want to listen to some good Dynasty talk, every Wednesday we drop the Dynasty Nerds podcast anywhere you can find your podcast, and we break down these rookie prospects and just talk Dynasty fantasy football 52 weeks of the year.
Love it, buddy. Great stuff, as always. Let's do it again soon. Thank you.
Absolutely, and we'll talk to you soon, friend.
All right, we'll talk to you later. There he goes, Rich Dotson, DynastyNerds.com. A tremendous follow on Twitter, at DynastyRich, as is DynastyNerds.com. He's a regular on ESPN Cleveland as well, and does some work with Bally Sports Cleveland on the betting side. So there we go, show. Like, it's the quarterback side, I think, is really interesting, because this is, I'm trying to think back of a more unexciting quarterback class. I have to go back to, I think, that E.J. Manuel, Geno Smith year. Cam Newton, outside of Cam Newton, the year he was drafted, there were some duds going back a few years ago as well. But this is, yeah, like, out of the last, what, 5 years at least, this is probably like the least exciting quarterback class.
I know. There was that year that Baker Mayfield went number one overall. That, what a bust.
Oh, what
pick
a, what
that
a year.
Was, right?
Good well, and God. Not a bust. Set the passing record for rookies. Baker will rise again. Had his statue unveiled at Oklahoma yesterday.
That statue was one of the worst statues I've ever seen. That's like one of the statue. That's like the Ronaldo. It's not quite the Ronaldo statue, because that is truly one of the funniest things I've ever seen in my entire life. But it is. I know it was like at Heisman Park, so it's like kind of like a certain cachet to it, I guess. But yeah, Baker bust, the, bust Baker. There you go.
The honor was great, but the statue, like a football body statue, whatever. It's a guy in pads. Who cares? But the head and face, I'm just like, I don't think the artist has ever seen a picture of Baker Mayfield before.
Here's my thing, Andy. Like, I don't understand how in the year 2022, we still, like, as a people, struggle with making statues. Like, you would think of all the technological advancements available in the world to people, statues should, they should be like 3D printing, like just pictures of people's faces at this point. Like, how are statue makers still not great at this? I don't understand.
It's an excellent question. I don't have an answer for that, Joe. I don't know. But it's that, like Rich said at the end there, it'll be interesting to see where, let's say, a Baker Mayfield goes, and it looks like now after the draft, where these teams go. Like, does he go to the hotly rumored Carolina, and you have the top, two of the top three picks from that 2018 draft on the same team, in Deadeye Sam Darnold and Baker? Like,
yeah, boy.
How does that,
Matt
how does
Rhule
that look?
Gonna, Matt Rhule is going to get Baker, and he's going to be like, I'm back to college. I go back to college. I'm out. See you later, Carolina. He's going back to college.
He can say, at least I did better than Urban Meyer.
Yeah, it's true. Hey, he's already surpassed that very low bar. So, hey, good for him.
You know what, though? Herb, he just collects cash. He just banks money. Dude's still also getting paid.
I'll say this about Matt Rhule, Andy. After us is Inside the Lines. I swear upon all that is holy, Matt Rhule looks like Stephen Rapp. They look like they're related. If you have never seen a picture of Stephen Rapp or Matt Rhule, please put those pictures side by side. Matt Rhule looks like he could be Rapp's like younger brother, or like his cousin or something. Like, there, I'm telling you, there's some shared blood there. I swear.
That's interesting. I'll have to do a side by side. That's interesting. Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun with this draft. I think really show the biggest fantasy football contributors we're going to see coming out of this are the wide receivers. I just feel it's just going to be a lot of meat to go over there. Quarterbacks least impactful, and we know. Again, there's going to be a running back that pops. We just don't know who or where they go. I think that's probably the toughest. And the tight end group, you got some weapons there, Show, but again, tight ends are really more on the, for the dynasty side, guys you try to project and push out a couple of years, with rare exceptions. You know, Kyle Pitts, our guy, flashed a couple times last year and hopefully kicks it up again in the, I don't know, Marcus Mariota, who knows, but tight ends the other side. So I really think fantasy-wise, we got to really focus on the wide receivers. That's where we're going to see the biggest impact.
Yeah, I guess Nick, next week's show will be after the draft, right? Because the draft will it be done by Sunday? I forget how it works again.
Yep.
Or
Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Saturday.
Right, because Saturday is rounds 4 to 7, right?
Right. So we'll be completely done.
Right, it'll be completely done by this time next week. So yeah, we'll probably do a segment in the 8 o'clock hour at some point, or maybe even at 9 o'clock, about whether, you know, the best landing spots for some of these rookies. I'm going to have article coming out for sportsnet.ca in the first week of May about the best landing spots for some of these rookie wide receivers, running backs, quarterbacks, et cetera, as well. So I think there's going to be a lot of coverage on the Sportsnet radio network and on the website and all, you know, wherever you get your coverages from for the NFL. It's going to be a lot of stuff you'll be able to kind of take in and partake in.
Oh, yeah. And where you're looking to draft, to place, and all that. I'll be fresh back from Vegas. I got a 6:05 a.m. Pacific time flight Saturday morning out show. So I'll be back, go to bed early Saturday night, get ready to share my in-person NFL draft Vegas stories.
I'm excited. I'm excited for you to meet Cade York in Vegas. Yeah,
that's right. I'm going to see if there's any kicker or punter. I'm getting like a signed picture. I'm going to have it sent to you.
Yeah, please.
To my biggest fan.
I hope
show.
You do. I want that. I will frame a picture of you and Cade York, and I will put it on my wall.
I want to get one of the undrafted guys. Just like what one of the guys who's like taken like a month after the draft, where it's like, we still are.
Try and find Mr. Irrelevant. Like, you know what I mean? Like, try and find whoever that guy ends up being. Yeah.
I'm going to get you the last undrafted free agent guy is Ethan Ratke out of James Madison when it comes to kickers. And Andrew Foster is a punter out of the great football program of Morehead State.
Yeah, Morehead State. Something tells me these guys will not be in Vegas next weekend.
There might be you know what? The ultimate would be if I can get the top ranked long snapper, I will tackle him to get a picture signed for you. Cal Adamidis out of Pittsburgh, 6th or 7th round. It's Pittsburgh. I'm not touching that guy. You know, it'll be next. Keegan Markgraff out of Utah, 7th round projection.
Well, there you go.
There you go. So dumb. But yeah, we'll have lots of NFL draft coverage coming up next week after the draft. Let's get to some fantasy baseball here, Show. Okay. Waiver wire pickups, two start pitchers. I know you love your two start pitchers when it comes to those finds. Because after your draft, it's all your baseball draft. You got your studs, you got your core. But then it's all about finding those pieces to maybe push you over the edge for that week. I like to have, and I know you do too to a certain degree, those one or two players on the batting side and the pitching side that you don't mind rotating in and out of your lineup for matchups, two start guys. Who are you looking at this week?
So real quick, last week I went with Josiah Gray and Nestor Cortes Jr. Josiah Gray had 1 run, 4 hits, 13 Ks over his last 2 outings. And I dare say, Andy, for Nestor Cortes Jr., he's probably a keeper now. If you picked Cortes Jr. up, like whether it was on my recommendation or just because he's been good, you're probably not going to drop him. Like, you're probably not streaming Nestor Cortes Jr. I think last I checked, last night, maybe this was on Friday, but either way, he went up to 78% ownership, and that might have even climbed a little bit itself. In his last two games, okay, and he played, I guess it was yesterday. In his last two games, he has 11 and a third innings pitched.
Oh, wow.
He's allowed 4 hits, 2 earned runs, and it was just those 2 earned runs were his first earned runs of the entire season to date. He has 3 starts, 2 of them coming this past week, and it was a home run to Mississauga's own Josh Naylor, who plays for Cleveland, who is returning from that really gruesome leg injury. So pretty cool stuff there, and obviously pretty great that he's only given up 2 earned runs all year. 3 walks, and in the last 2 starts, Andy, he has 20 strikeouts.
Wow.
20 strikeouts for Nestor Cortes Jr. So, hey, if you have him in your team now, yeah, congratulations. He looks like, he honestly looks like like maybe the best pitcher on the Yankees right now. Like better than Gerrit Cole, maybe.
Absolutely. Well, show if you look at it from your roster availability comment, since Friday, he has been added. His ownership in Yahoo Leagues has gone up 43%.
Holy smokes, so, man.
He's now rostered in 82% of Yahoo Leagues, 43% increase over the weekend.
Yeah, that's
so
crazy.
That's just a the numbers there are phenomenal. So if but that means show. That means still there is, 18% of leagues who don't have him. So give a
that's
look.
True.
Maybe he's there.
And that's a good point. I think if he is somehow available in one of your leagues, I think you drop basically whatever end of rotation, bench guy you got, because I can almost guarantee that Cortes Jr. over the course of the whole season will probably be better than that guy, right? So
it seems like it.
Yeah, you might as well, on the off chance he's still available, yeah, go out and grab him. For my two start pitchers this week, I'm going to double dip. I'm going to go back to Josiah Gray. He's still, I think, under 50% rostered. And again, this might have gone up after his start a couple days ago, but last I checked, he was still under 50%. And even if he's slightly over, I think you can still make the argument you should go out and grab him. He was a good streamer last week. I'm glad that worked out. He has a nice fastball. He has a curveball that comes out at over 80 miles an hour, right? The Nationals are actually double dipping this week against the Giants. They're playing the Giants twice, and he's going to get both starts at some point. They're at home and away against the Giants. And I'm not super concerned. I know the Giants are a pretty good team, but they strike out a ton. They strike out the fifth most across the major leagues of baseball, and the Giants sport a .224 batting average. So, right now you want Josiah Gray to be going against a team that's struggling like that. And of course, the parks that they play in, both in Washington and San Francisco, are not super hitter friendly. So if you're in a deeper-ish league, 12 teams, 14 teams, you might want to go and add Josiah Gray before that really hops off the page.
47% show.
What's that? What is it now?
47% ownership, up 25% over the last day. Quick Josiah Gray story show.
Yeah,
I anger dropped him after his first start, April 8. I had him, I think, as one of my last picks, if not the last pick in my fantasy draft. And I was like, I was on the fence. I'm like, Nationals kind of stink. And then he got me -1 fantasy point after his April 8. So I'm like, God, get out of here, Greg. I bootskied him, and I've been punished ever since. Yep. That's... Two wins after that, so there you go, folks. Don't anger drop that early in the season. Maybe I didn't have my maybe I wasn't done my first coffee, and I was just like, get out of here. And there you go. Now he's gone. He's out of my life now. He's gone forever.
He's not. Can't you pick him up? He's not
nope,
still available.
Someone got him.
Oh man.
Yep. 47% rostered. Yep. Still widely available though. So that's a good looking pickup to your point.
And my other pickup to wrap up on the two-start pitchers, someone who is very capable of throwing strikes, is Eric Lauer from the Milwaukee Brewers. Only 17% rostered. Again, that might have gone up over the last couple of days. Maybe it's like in the 20s now, for the Brewers. But, I mean, the Brewers are also like a pitching factory, right? Like any pitcher who plays the Brewers, you're kind of like, they're probably going to be good eventually, right? That's it's like admittedly a part of the reason I was like attracted by this pick. But they're playing at Philadelphia and at home against Chicago. And, the Phillies and Cubs are not, I don't know, they're not like slouches by any means, right? But the Phillies
they're
do,
fine.
Yeah, they're fine, yeah. But it's just with the Phillies specifically, if they're not hitting home runs, they're not getting RBI at all. It feels like, right? Like they're either driving the ball out of the park or it's a feast or famine with the Phillies, right? So I feel like that's the kind of ride or die thing there is one reason why you kind of might be encouraged for someone like Lauer. Because it does mean they've had a little more bad games than usual. And then you got the Cubs. And I know the Cubs just beat the Pirates 21-0 yesterday. I know that's like you might look at that and be like, oh, you don't want to start any pitcher against the Cubs. But I do kind of feel like, especially with this offense, like the Chicago offense right now is kind of, I don't know if overachieving is the right word, but it does kind of feel like they're like a little ahead of where they might be overall by the end of the season. Same for the Cleveland Guardians, right? Like, I know that's not a part of this conversation, but it just kind of feels like there's some, like, early on in the season, the balls are just not flying as much as they did last year. I think you can probably attribute the non-juiced baseballs to that a little bit, but I don't know. I feel like with the Cubs, you might feel okay, especially with their with them playing in Milwaukee and not in Chicago, not at Wrigley. So, yeah, I'm going to go with Eric Lauer for the other one, although that's definitely a riskier one because he's not quite at the same caliber of Nestor Cortez and Gray probably. But yeah, I think I like Josiah Gray again and Eric Lauer for some strikes again here, Andy.
That's right.
Strike.
Keep that on auto push. Get it ready. Now, the Eric Lauer ownership point, he's gone up 14% ownership in the last 24 hours. So he's at 24% totally owned in Yahoo right now, starting today, as you said, on Sunday nighter against Philly. So still widely available. Damn, he's taking in my league too. These guys must be DMing the guys in my league beforehand. I'm looking at these guys trying to pick him up. Okay. So those are your two start pitchers. I picked a couple guys up off of waivers who I really like this week, show. Because I was looking on my relief pitcher side of it. I was like, I'd like to try if I can, you know, get one guy who can get me saves. And then another one who might be, maybe has that double designation who could be a starter relief. So you get those, you know, better starter points potentially. But Jorge Lopez for Baltimore. This guy's been popping. And I got him on, what day is it? It's Sunday. I got him, I think, Thursday or something like that. So he got another save yesterday, back-to-back days of saves for Baltimore. And initially I was hesitant. I'm like, Baltimore, I'm pitching. You know how you just think of some teams and things either go with them or they don't. Chicago Bears, you always think defense, whether it is or not. They just have a defensive mind. Baltimore in pitching is usually like, it's usually not good. But Lopez, guy's been popping, man. Two even ERA, has a win on the year, and three total saves in his last three attempts. So if you're looking for a relief pitcher, 33% owned. Now he's gone up 27% over the last 24 hours. So Jorge Lopez is someone I really like for Baltimore show, especially too, like we talk about with so many committees in sports, true closers and guys who aren't a part of a committee are getting ever rarer as well in MLB.
You know, that's true. That is actually true. There's always going to be like a handful of guys who are going to be the top closers. But I don't know, like bullpens, generally speaking, are so hard to predict year over year, aren't they?
Oh,
like, it's
they
just
are.
Like in terms of how they change and guys are good one year and then they fall off another year. I don't know. Like, I agree with you, though. It is really tough. I do like that one. I do like that pickup by you. There's some guys, too, you know, like I feel like you can, generally speaking, point to the kind of, how do you want to call it, like the pipeline of certain teams that have been good to great for certain positions. Like, you said it, right? Like, when you think of the Bears, you think of defense, even if the defense is not very good. When you think of the Baltimore Orioles, maybe you still think of the Chris Davis years or something like that, right? Maybe you still think of Manny Machado in a Baltimore Orioles uniform, for example, even though he's played for the Padres for a number of years now, right? Like, that's something you think about. I feel like the Tampa Bay Rays are always going to be one of those teams, like, despite the fact that I think they're like the zombie team of the AL East and they'll never be able to truly kill them. I always feel like their bullpen, like, it doesn't really matter who is there. Like, just pick whatever bullpen guy you want. They'll probably always be Jalen Beeks, Matt Wisler. These guys are all going to be good. Like, you know what I mean? It's remarkable, right? Honestly.
It is kind of funny how you look at it. Yeah, when I think of Baltimore, I think that they can hit but can't pitch. That's just the first thing that comes to mind. I got one other waiver wire pick. Now, I got this guy on Wednesday. Show, check out this ownership leap since Saturday. So I got, I might be mispronouncing his first name, but Tyro Estrada for the Giants.
Right.
Tyro, I think I might have got it right.
You're right. No, you're right.
All right. Nailed it. Yes. up 51%, show. 51% ownership since Saturday. I got this dude Wednesday. I got Tyro Estrada before it was cool. And part of the reason that jumped out to me, triple position eligibility. You know I can't resist it, Joe. I can't.
Of course.
And I won't. Second base, shortstop, and outfield. I wanted to get a little pickup in my outfield without just getting a pure guy and maybe mix. And he just sort of came out. He had a really hot 3-4 game stretch the other week. And I was like, okay, you know what? I'm going to pick him up. I don't remember who I dropped for him, but I had a guy who was like, I wasn't doing much, so I dropped him. Been looking real good. His last three games, has hit in all of them, multi-hit game on Friday, and he's got three stolen bases on the year, so he's mixing in those multi-category spots. Just seems more to me like a guy who, he's not going to hit necessarily a ton of home runs, but he'll give you some stolen bases. and he just gets hits. You know, he's just like for those that hit category, or if you're in a points league, he's going to get you hit points. So a nice steady guy that you can mix and match in on by one of your players has an off day, whatever. So I'm liking him. We'll have to see if he goes the way of Steve Kwan, who was really hot for the Guardians and then kind of cooled off, or if he can keep it going. But for the Giants, Tyro Estrada, looks like many other people are agreeing with me, but right now he went from 4% ownership Wednesday to 56% rostered as of this morning.
Yeah, I remember I was doing the pitching changes at some point earlier this week, and like you said, he plays with the Giants, and I remember the leadoff two-run home run for the game, like the first score of the game, I should say, not leadoff, but the first score of the game was a two-run jack by Estrada, and I thought, man, like it was a bomb, too. Like, he crushed that ball. It wasn't just like a little cheapy, right? So, yeah. He's been playing a lot better as of late, so I like that one for sure. People agree with you, it would seem.
It looks like it. And let's just look at a couple of Blue Jays here, show. Of course, Vladdy Guerrero Jr., I had the first overall pick in my fantasy baseball draft. I picked him. And I'm loving life. And he had those four. I was a little never am I going to be concerned about Vladdy Guerrero, but he had that, three, four strikeout games. I was like, all right, come on. Let's get sorted here, Vladdy. Let's figure this out. But, you know, we don't have to talk about how great Vladdy Guerrero Jr. is. It's so nice, show, just whether you're doing, DFS or your league, to have so many Blue Jays that are fantasy relevant. Because as we say, if you have your favorite team and you can have fantasy players on there, it just gives you that extra bit of joy when they do well, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you know who is going to be a popular waiver pickup this week? I bet to a degree might be Santiago Espinal, honestly. Mm. Most of his value, I think, comes for the Blue Jays on the defensive side of things for the most part. But I mean, this is a guy who has basically been the everyday second baseman over the last last week or so. Biggio is still in there, obviously, as we've seen, but Espinal has been playing very well. I mean, he's hit two home runs in the last two games, which is remarkable considering he had two home runs coming into this series with the Astros, and he's in a lead with at least four. So, hey, good for him. So he's doubled his career home runs in the last two games, which is remarkable. And he's hitting for more power. The ball's coming off the bat with harder exit velocity. I don't know. It's just he has been absolutely fantastic. So I'm not sure how fantasy valuable he's going to continue to be, but hey, I mean, if he keeps this up and he keeps getting hits and his OBP and keeps getting on base and so on, it keeps on rising, I mean I'm not going to say the sky's the limit, but he's going to be a nice little piece at the end of your team, I would think.
Well, 50 apparently he added 15 pounds of muscle during the offseason. Yeah. Right, so that's we're seeing the rewards of that. Has a couple stolen bases as well. I'm just looking, he is only 5% rostered in Yahoo League, so 95% availability. And yeah, it really depends. I think as of right now, show, Espinal would be somebody. Again, look at your roster, folks, okay? Is there a guy who you drafted, you picked up, whatever, and you know you're not going to play him? You just know. It was a mistake, something didn't work out, whatever, and it's just, you're like, man, that dude's going to be on my bench. What do we always say, show? Don't be proud. Pride will kill you in fantasy sport. Don't be proud. Now, don't panic drop Josiah Gray like I did. Don't anger drop. Don't be angry dropping guys. But if you know there's a guy who you took a flyer and just like, then pick up an Espinal. Have somebody who you think might have at least some upside that you won't feel bad about, you that you can drop later, but who might have some upside that you could use, right? That's the type of pickup I think Espinal is at this point. You have him. Are you going to put him in your lineup right away? No, but he could develop into something more fantasy relevant as the season goes on.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I think there's a good chance that come the end of the season, we're talking about maybe not a breakout year for Espinal, because he had, I would say, maybe even last year was his breakout year, depending, seeing how it ended. But yeah, Espinal has been fantastic. I think he's going to be, at least, I mean, for Blue Jays fans, you're watching Blue Jays games between now and the end of the year, I think you're going to be very happy that Espinal is a Blue Jay.
Yeah, and taking on the Astros in Houston, 2:10 first pitch, of course. Across the Sportsnet Radio Network show. You'll be working that game, right?
I will, yeah. I'll be heading into baseball control in just an hour or so.
Excellent. All right. Well, we're going to take the break, come back. We'll maybe a little bit more fantasy football, but it'll also be our Fantasy Wrestling League time, our All Elite Wrestling Listener League. How did everybody do
last week. And if you want to be the listener GM, if you score the most fantasy points in a given week, you will win Domino's Pizza. You'll get a pizza prize. So if you want to be our wrestling GM this week, our guest listener GM, hit us up on Twitter at AndyMC81, at SNSLE, at The Fantasy Show, or you can text in 590-590. You can do that when The Fantasy Show wraps up next across the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Strikes.
This is The Fantasy Show with Andy McNamara and Show Ali on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Back to wrap up The Fantasy Show across the Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm Andy McNamara, that's Show Ali. Give us a follow on Twitter at AndyMC81, at SNSLE, at The Fantasy Show. You can also hit us up right there if you want to be our listener GM in our Fantasy Wrestling League, our AEW at our buddies DropTheBelt.com. Have our wrestling fantasy league going on there. You can either shoot us a DM or on Twitter respond to the latest tweet or text us 590-590, name and location. And if you score the most fantasy points in a given week, you can win a pizza prize. Now, Show, the listener came oh so close, like 3 points. 3 points. Nick, who is part of our UFF Sports scouting team, actually don't know Nick's last name, funny enough, but
Taylor.
Nick, at
Nick Taylor.
Nick Taylor, there you go. At VIPSMINC, Nick Taylor was 3 points shy of having been the first listener GM winner of the week, Show. But the kingdom, Andrew Hustler Patterson, our guy who appears on Sportsnet 960 quite often and does a great job on Winnipeg Sports Talk. He's actually coming to Vegas. He's going to be doing some live shows from the Circa with us on the draft week, so that'll be lots of fun. But that was the winner, so he'll get his pizza prize. But Nick, so close, Nick, so close to win that. I got to say, Show, first of all, I don't know if you saw on Twitter, I know Josh Santos, our technical director, did, that Jade Cargill, TBS champion, I was going back and forth with Nick because he had Jade Cargill. He picked her up on his fantasy team. I picked up Marina Sharif. They were fighting for the TBS championship. And I, you know, said, oh, Marina's gonna win. Jade Cargill, the champ herself, Show, tweeted, blasted me on Twitter. It was amazing. Did you see that?
I did see that. And I liked her tweet, and I did not like your tweet. Because that's what you got to do. That's what you got to do, man.
Classic. But then, I think, you know, I don't want to start Hollywood rumors here, but she did follow me. She did follow me on Twitter, so we'll have to track the have to track the progression of our relationship from there.
Don't worry. By the end of the AEW season, she'll have unfollowed.
She will not have unfollowed.
What kind of Hollywood rumor would that even start?
I don't know. That's up to the public.
That's up to Hollywood.
That's up to Hollywood to start. But she was like, shut up, you wab, blah, blah, blah. And she like was at it, and I was like, ah, this is amazing. And then she also tweeted out that she called Pittsburgh ugly. And, of course, I hate Pittsburgh because of the Steelers. So I agreed. I was like, okay, now I'm a Jade Cargill fan. So she liked that tweet and followed me back. Let's go.
She beat Marina Sharif.
God. Oh, delete that one.
She did beat Marina Sharif.
To keep. So that was kind of cool, guys. Eh? Got a little love from Jade Cargill. I might have to get some sort of trade going with the listener to get her on my team.
Look, all I know is that people who are listening to this, Andy will do anything for Twitter followers. There's not a thing on the planet he would not do for Twitter followers. So that Jade Cargill followed him, however brief this ends up being. Hey. And you gotta make the time is life is short, man. You gotta enjoy it while it lasts.
lifetime friend. I had a bad week, guys. My guys just didn't really show up. Jungle Boy lost to Kyle O'Reilly in the Owen Hart Foundation tournament. Serena Deeb is going this week, so I'm hoping for some big thing. I picked her up. I think Shida's gonna probably win back. Show, you picked up the window open. You picked up Hikaru Shida, and I know it's only because you looked at AEW's Twitter to see what the matches were. I know.
Actually, what I did was I looked at the day the matchup were teased on AEW. I guess it was Friday's Rampage. That's what Friday's is, right?
Yeah.
So on Friday, I was at work and I was in baseball control, and I was seeing the stuff come in, and I was, oh, I wonder who the next one is going to be. And so I went on, like, Reddit to find the thread that said who's playing next week. And I'm like, oh, she did there. So I asked Santos. I'm like, yo, Santos, is she the good guy? And he was like, yeah. And I'm like, okay. So I put the claim in right away.
Collusion. Collusion.
A-B-A. Anyone but Andy.
You lousy.
I'm down for that.
A-B-A.
Stop, that will not sell. No, that will not get over.
A-B-A.
No. Santos, you remain in first at the house of Bebe. Adam Cole going over Ishii in the Forbidden Door. What do you think of that real quick, the Forbidden Door, the New Japan AEW crossover? I know you're a big New Japan guy.
If you're not even as a New Japan guy, but if you're a wrestling fan in general, there's no negative about it. No. If you're not familiar with New Japan, it's a really, really good promotion in that, obviously, in Japan. That's where, like, a lot of these guys that you see in AEW got a lot of their popularity, mm-hmm. along with being in ROH. But New Japan had a partnership with ROH for a very long time, and that's how they got their American exposure, or the U.S. exposure, or North American exposure.
So Adam Cole enters the tournament beating Ishii. Yep.
Yeah, and a lot of the stuff that you see on AEW TV and, like, the way it's presented is also, like, very similar to how New Japan is presented as well.
It is. Good stuff, guys. So if you want to be the listener GM for this week, hit us up, text 590-590 or on
A-B-A.
Twitter. We got to go. No.
A-B-A.
No. Boo. All right. For Santos, for show, I'm Andy. You've been listening to The Fantasy Show across the Sportsnet Radio Network.